Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Inauguration Day edition of the Three Martini Lunch. It's a big day for Donald Trump, so of course Ian Tuttle is filling in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Well, depending on your perspective, there's certainly a lot of brightness, I think, for a lot of conservatives. They're certainly glad Obama is gone. They certainly, I think most of them see Trump as an upgrade, and we'll see what happens from here. But as expected, here's what happened just a couple minutes after noon today.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
The office of President of the United States.
And will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend. The Constitution of the United States. So help me God. Congratulations, Mr. President.
So good news that John Roberts actually remembered to bring the text of the oath with him this time. That was a little bit smoother than 2009. We don't necessarily have good, bad, and crazy martinis today. It's kind of in the eye of the beholder, depending on what you think of what Trump had to say at different points in the speech. It was a relatively brief speech, about 16 minutes long. Let's go through three different key points that we think were in this speech. First of all, Trump saying it's no longer the powerful in Washington who are in control.
Today's ceremony, however, has very special meaning, because today we are not merely transferring power from one administration to another or from one party to another, but we are transferring power from Washington, D.C., and giving it back to you, the people. What truly matters is not which party controls our government, but whether our government is controlled by the people. January 20th, 2017, will be remembered as the day the people became the rulers of this nation again.
So, Ian, it's been a populist message from day one for Donald Trump. It certainly starts off his presidency with a populist message, and I think it's one that a lot of conservatives can embrace, at least in the general concept, because, of course, we've been railing against government growth, government power, pretty much since we got involved in political commentary and political reporting. To have a president who actually wants to decentralize power from Washington, that's a good message.
That's right. So I should start off by saying, obviously, I have been, and you know, my colleagues here at National Review have been, to varying degrees, very skeptical of Donald Trump throughout this entire process. I think, you know, more or less with good reason. But he's president now. I can say that officially. Obviously, we're praying for him, hoping for the best. And we got a little taste of what's to come in this speech. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of garment rending already from pundits, you know, Rachel Maddow looking extremely distressed over at MSNBC. But there's much to plumb here, I think, is sort of taken in concert with what we've seen over the past year. And you point to a good place to start, Greg, which is this was sort of pure Trump, almost campaign-style populism in this speech. And this was a salvo against the ruling class, you know, so to speak, and the ruling class, I suppose, of both parties. This was a speech in which Trump, in saying, you know, that my intention is to return the power to the people, was basically saying it's I am against Barack Obama and Joe Biden and everything that has transpired for the last 8 years. I am also against doctrinaire Paul Ryan, Mitch McConnell conservatism. And you know, obviously there are some problems there which are worth highlighting and that I think raise serious questions. But there was certainly, in some sense, a very traditional American Democratic message here. Also, what I think is important, something that conservatives, even those who disagree vigorously with Donald Trump, can get behind is what was more or less a robust defense of the idea of nationhood, which has been, you know, sort of a theme of his entire campaign, and certainly has been at the forefront of his mind, the mind of some of the most ideological of his inner circle. You know, talking about patriotism was sort of the touchstone word, and restoring borders, and, you know, buy American, hire American. We can debate the economics of this, but in there was a sense that, as he said, you know, America comes first, and the priority of the government will be to serve the interests of the American people in all of its decisions. That's a good, generally, a good rule of thumb for the position that he's taking on. So, you know, again, America first, as a phrase, which Trump hit on a couple times during the speech, has a toxic history. People will point that out, you know, whether Trump knows this, who knows, and it's worth keeping that in mind. He is pointing to an orientation for the incoming administration that is a huge turn from what we've seen for the past 8 years, and in that sort of broad sense, there's a lot to look forward to there.
Let's move on to the second clip that we're going to talk about here, Ian. Obviously, I think there are two major reasons that Trump got elected. People were not happy with the direction of the country, and they really didn't like the alternative in this race, being Hillary Clinton. But when it comes to what they don't like about what's going on in the country, Trump talked about that, too, in his speech today. He talked about it in a lot more detail than most presidents do in their inaugural addresses. They usually refer to challenges or difficulties and then pivot to the soaring rhetoric, which he tried to do later. But Trump got a little more specific today.
Mothers and children trapped in poverty in our inner cities. Rusted out factories scattered like tombstones across the landscape of our nation. An education system flush with cash, but which leaves our young and beautiful students deprived of all knowledge. And the crime, and the gangs, and the drugs that have stolen too many lives and robbed our country of so much unrealized potential. This American carnage stops right here and stops right now.
So, Ian, especially in inner city parts of America, you're going to have a lot of people agreeing with you. Schools are terrible there. Crime is a major problem there. Drugs are a major problem there. But getting specific like this, and I think that line of this American carnage is probably going to be the line that a lot of people take away from this speech.
Yeah, American carnage was arguably the most memorable rhetorical flourish. You know, Donald Trump's future death metal band name. there are, I think, two things to say here. One is it's worth remembering that not all inaugural addresses are rosy. If you put this address, some of these bleaker portions of it, next to Ronald Reagan's first inaugural address in 1981, you'll see some striking similarities. It wouldn't surprise me if Trump was aware of Reagan's first inaugural and looked at it for some guidance, because the similarities are quite remarkable in certain ways. This is, though, what you would expect from Trump, in the sense of this speech was attuned to a political moment. And that's important. You know, anybody who would have won this year, and we can sort of say this in hindsight, had to look at the country or had to see the country in a certain way, like Donald Trump sees it. This particular attention to the forgotten man, you know, he invoked that phrase. These, you know, sort of lower middle class, rural, white, herding people in the country. Anyone who wanted to be elected this year had to see that, it turns out. And so the speech, yes, had Donald Trump written all over it, but it also was reflective of the political moment, which for a lot of people is very disheartening. And they felt very disheartened for some time. And so the dark undercurrent, dark moments in this speech, I think you would have gotten as well from, you know, a President Bernie Sanders or someone else who tapped into that feeling in the country. I think there will be a lot of, this was such a dark, savage speech. Yeah, but a lot of people see a country in more or less dire straits, and they want someone who's willing to say that. And that's the reason that Donald Trump is up there on the podium and so many others aren't.
Just taking a moment here to be thankful that President Bernie Sanders doesn't exist, as you mentioned that in passing.
Yet, Greg, yet.
That's right. He's only 75. Come on. He's still got a good shot. But I think you and I both said before we started recording here that the speech actually reads better and more optimistic, more hopeful than Trump delivered it. It sounded a little more pessimistic and dour as he delivered it. But as you said, he was referring to very real problems that people have been disgusted with a lack of action on for a long time. And we'll see. Donald Trump has said that the action starts now, and we'll see what he can accomplish. Obviously, these first 2 years of his term present a golden opportunity on a number of fronts, and we'll see what can actually get done. On to the third clip here, and this is towards the end. This is the soaring rhetoric. Obviously, it's a divided country right now. You look at the election results in the popular vote. That's clear. We have a very stiff, still red and blue divide, although more states went red by far than blue, and Trump got a lot of states that had been blue for a long time to go red. But here's his effort to explain what is in front of America, and if we do actually pull together as a team and as a nation, what can be accomplished?
We stand at the birth of a new millennium, ready to unlock the mysteries of space, to free the earth from the miseries of disease, and to harness the energies, industries, and technologies of tomorrow. A new national pride will stir our souls, lift our sights, and heal our divisions. It's time to remember that old wisdom our soldiers will never forget, that whether we are black or brown or white, we all bleed the same red blood of patriots. We all enjoy the same glorious freedoms, and we all salute the same great American flag.
Good lines there, Ian. Not a lot to complain about there. It's just a matter of whether at a point now in America where people who don't like him believe that he means that.
Yeah, that's generally right. I don't think anyone who is realistic about this speech would have expected it to be particularly conciliatory, in part because, again, in as much as Donald Trump was going to speak to the political moment, and the reason that he was standing where he was standing, it wasn't about unity. It has been about changing a status quo, radically changing a status quo that a lot of people feel has been, edging them out of opportunity and prosperity. And that's what the speech was about, and that's what Donald Trump's message has been pretty much since day one. So you weren't going to get too much waxing poetic about how we all need to, come together and the rest. But there is in this particular clip, I think, a good illustration of what I talked about a little earlier, which is that defense of nationhood and how patriotism was really sort of the touchstone of this speech. And I think you get a good sense of where Donald Trump's head is and just the way that he views and potentially, sort of Steve Bannon and that sort of side of the right, how they view national unity. And that is the vessel for that is patriotism. The vessel for that is a deep and abiding loyalty to the country, not just as sort of a high-flying concept of, rights and liberties or whatever, but as a real thing of sort of place and blood and history. That was, I think, very much sort of between the lines of those portions of the speech. And I think that's going to be very instructive going forward when we think about what type of nationalism and what type of unity does Donald Trump really want. Well, they want people who are rallying around this this robust sort of concrete, passionate, in the gut feeling of love for America. That's sort of at the heart of Trumpism, and you know that has some real good to it and has some real dangers to it. And the next 4 years will flesh out sort of where along the spectrum this administration will fall.
Ian, I know it's easy to say for us that we thought for quite a while we'd never see this day, but the day has come. We're rejoicing, certainly, that President Obama is gone. And with Republicans in control of Congress and the White House, there is the opportunity for a lot of good to get done here. And we'll see how quickly and how well they get after that work.
That's absolutely right.
Ian, enjoy the weekend. I'm sure you got plenty of work to do before then. But as always, thanks for filling in for Jim.
Thank you so much, Greg. Talk to you soon.
Ian Tuttle of National Review and for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us. Have a wonderful weekend, and please tune in Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.